Hi, I'm Helene Gale, President and CEO of the Chicago Community Trust. Welcome back to another episode of Trust Talks. A recent study showed Chicago area lenders invested more money in a single majority white neighborhood on the north side than they did in all of Chicago's majority black neighborhoods combined. Chicago's majority white communities received 4.6 times the investment that black communities do, and 2 times the investment of Latinx communities. Proximity to quality jobs, transportation, goods, services, and lifestyle amenities influences property values and give residents access to opportunities that are necessary to enjoy a high quality of life and be able to build wealth. A core strand of the Trust's strategic focus to close the racial and ethnic wealth gap in the Chicago region is catalyzing neighborhood investment. We are advancing programs, policies, and other interventions to create the conditions that will attract capital to the region's disinvested Black and Latinx communities and strengthen the community development ecosystem that is essential to rebuilding and recovery. Among the Trust's most innovative initiatives are the Community Desk Chicago, a collaboration with BCG, JP Morgan Chase, that connects community-based developers with capital providers and technical assistance. The other initiative is the Pre-Development Fund, which provides community developers in challenging markets with no-cost capital to get their projects off the ground. Since its launch in the fall of 2020, the Pre-Development Fund has provided more than $1 million to nearly 20 community developers to help cover these important early stage costs. The Pre-Development Fund is the first of its kind for philanthropy. And pre-development is just one part of a complicated set of activities that make real estate development possible in communities that for too long haven't seen much of it. In this episode of Trust Talks, learn about how we're using our catalyzing neighborhood investment strategy to build the capacity of Black and Latinx developers to build community scale wealth through real estate development.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our podcast. This is Michael Davidson of the Neighborhood Investment Team at the Chicago Community Trust, and I'm eager to introduce our guests, Lennox Jackson of Urban Equities, Janae DeFell of Community Desk Chicago, and Juan Saldana of P3 Markets. But before I do that, I wanted to put today's conversation in context, because while the focus is going to be real estate development in neighborhoods, there's a broader aim, and that broader aim is the Trust's North Star of closing the racial and ethnic wealth gap. And we're doing a number of things at the Trust to make that happen, including deep investments in the capacity of neighborhoods to attract capital. Now, neighborhoods are a lot of things, but real estate development is an especially important indicator of economic mobility in a neighborhood. And real estate development isn't a level playing field across communities, which is the focus of today's conversation. So we're here to talk about, one, real estate development in places that have been structurally locked out of market opportunities for a generation, and two, how do we change that? So let's formally introduce our guests.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Michael. Thank you for having me today. Lennox Jackson, founder and CEO of Urban Equities Incorporated, which is a real estate development and consulting company. Started the company in June of 1993 and thankful to still be around.
Thanks, Mike, for having me. Hi, everyone. I'm Janae DeFell with Community Desk Chicago. Community Desk Chicago is a partnership between the Chicago Community Trust, the Boston Consulting Group, and the J.P. Morgan Chase Foundation. And we were established in 2019 in part because we found that there was a need within community to really support catalytic real estate development projects and connecting those projects to capital. So I'm very excited and energized about today's conversation.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Thank you so much to Chicago Community Trust for allowing us to speak on this very important subject. My name is Juan Saldana. I'm one of the managing partners of P3 Markets. Our office is located in Brownsville. Phil Beckham, my business partner and our team, are honored to serve that wonderful community. So P3 Markets is an impact-focused real estate development firm that values transparency, co-creation, culture, and belonging. This is how we choose to invest and create value in our communities with our public and private partners. Happy to be here. I'm also part of the YIELD program that is helping emerging developers of color and women build relationships with seasoned developers that make deals happen. So very happy to be here to talk about this very important subject. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, all three of you. So let's just kind of go right into it. And Lennox, I'm going to start with you. You're a private developer, and you've been at this for a long time. And I think of you as very much a mission-driven developer, committed to communities where it can be hard to assemble the capital necessary to get something built. So I want you to tell us about your commitment to some of our city's most underinvested communities and why other developers shouldn't overlook these places.
Well, Michael, I believe leadership always starts at the top. And so with that, I have been and continue to be very intentional about reimagining narratives. I believe that any community area can be different in a positive and favorable way. And so I believe in also in self-empowerment. I believe that if afforded equitable opportunities, people choose to change their lot in life. And so as a private company, I believe in trying to assemble and deploy resources in such a way that it helps to drive change in communities that have been underinvested or perhaps are sort of emerging at that pivot point as we speak. Why is this such a big deal? Why should other developers share this thinking? Because quite frankly, we're here to serve. We are born to serve. And so it's not about making money. It's about trying to drive impact and change lives. I believe that if we can do that in a favorable way, in an impactful way, we will generate attractive financial returns in order that we can build a sustainable business. And so I have a dualistic mindset around this. I do want to do good, but I do have to drive a return for the shareholders and investors who entrust us with their resources.
Boy, if everyone in the private sector would come at it from that philosophy, and boy, the world would really change. A quick response question from you, Lennox. Maybe in, I don't know, just two or three words. What are developers and other investor types missing when they bypass one of these communities?
Seeing opportunities. You know, it's one thing, you know, they say art is in the eye of the beholder. And so, you know, a lot of times, if we're unfamiliar with something, we won't see the value, we won't see the opportunity until someone else extracts it and makes it very visible. And that's when the marketplace starts to kind of get in line and starts to respond. But someone or some group of people initially have to have a risk-taking mindset to see the possibilities. And there is value in these communities, but a lot of folks just don't have the patience or the intentionality to devote time to extracting that value.
You know, you and I spoke privately about this recently when I visited one of the sites that you're hoping to develop in Chicago's Austin neighborhood, and we were talking a little bit about this next question. I know you've mentored young professionals looking to get into real estate. Why do you think it's so important to have people of color in the field of real estate development? And for the listener who may want to get into the field, what's your advice?
Well, again, here I believe in leadership, right? And so as a leader, I need to have people who are following me. I can't lead myself. And so I believe that there are people who want to devote their lives to trying to make a difference. And so I believe that there are people who just need to be afforded an opportunity to be introduced to the principles of real estate development, which there are quite a number of them. But I do believe that there are a lot of folks who need to be in this because they bring a certain voice to this conversation. Yet people who live in these communities, people who perhaps grew up in these communities and now want to return to them as working professionals, for example, their voices need to be at the table. when it comes to city and other governmental agencies trying to develop policy, trying to develop programmatic initiatives to help rebuild these communities. These people need to be there at the table.
I'm going to pivot to you for a minute, Janae. You know, you're leading this new initiative, Community Desk Chicago, and a lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people are talking about you. And I've heard you and others, myself included, refer to real estate development as an ecosystem. And I'm going to put that in air quotes here for the listener, which is very wonky. And that's what people like you and I do when we work in kind of a wonky space. We call something complicated an ecosystem. But I want you to tell us what you think that means.
Great question, Michael. So when you think about real estate development as part of an ecosystem, you know, I think the simplest way to describe that is it's really about all of the components to make the deal work, to make the deal work, to move the project forward, right? So we break that down. You have the developer, which we've got a couple on the phone on this podcast today. They are a major player in this ecosystem. You've got the capital providers, which you and I have talked extensively about. And those capital providers range from lenders, tax credit investors, philanthropy, and even if you think about it from a municipality perspective, those folks that are, you know, that are providing neighborhood opportunity funds and sort of other sort of municipal related grants at the state and the local level. And then you also have the community, right? And so the community also makes up part of this ecosystem. And so all of these components really play a critical role in the ecosystem, and all of them have to work together, right? So a developer can't necessarily develop a building without the necessary capital. And this is what we're talking about today. But then you also have to make sure that that project is appropriate for the community. And how does the community react to that? And then there's also all of the complications associated with doing development, zoning, plan developments, you know, automatic approvals. And so, you know, if you're not a really sophisticated developer, and so I think Lennox touched a little bit on this in terms of thinking about the mentorship, it's a lot to juggle in order to move these projects forward. And you have to have the skill set and the support and the network to be able to really move through and navigate all of these players within this ecosystem to for that project to be successful.
And I think as a follow-up to that, Janae, just thinking about the complexity of the ecosystem, navigating the ecosystem, especially when you're inexperienced, Community Desk Chicago is adding something new and important to this ecosystem. Why don't you tell us more about what that is? And I guess, you know, my request is to simplify it for the listeners, because I know that real estate development is so complex. Tell us what you think the value add is of the community of Community Desk Chicago to this ecosystem.
Absolutely. So if you think about our name, Community Desk Chicago, I was really actually energized when I joined the team at the Trust and really sort of leading this work. Because I think about Community Desk Chicago as a help desk, right? I think that was the perfect name for this particular initiative. And I think the value add that we bring to the table is we really can be that connector and that navigator for community. And so I think as Lennox had alluded to earlier, if you don't have access or a seat at the table, it makes it very difficult to access the resources, the connections, the network, to get the capital, to get access to bid on projects. And so what we try to do with the desk is really about, you know, with our North Star being, how do we support this project in getting the necessary capital to move forward? But it's also about how can we also strengthen this project by serving as a navigator and a connector to the critical relationships that they need to be successful. So those are really sort of the two sort of main points that we think that we add value to the ecosystem is really about giving folks a seat at the table and helping them to navigate this very complex ecosystem.
You know, you're working with a lot of folks who, unlike, say, Lennox and Juan, aren't seasoned developers. You know, this includes business owners who need some real estate to open shop, and community-based organizations that don't have a lot of real estate experience, but are nonetheless overseeing real estate projects in their communities. What's the main issue you come across, Janae, with these projects? And what's the kind of the one thing that you most hope they take away from your work with them?
Great question again. So I would love to just narrow it down to one, and I'll try to do that. But I would probably say capacity is probably the biggest, issue. Again, as we're talking about the level of sophistication that it takes to do deals. So we haven't really talked a lot about the financial feasibility of projects in communities, but generally there's a dollar threshold that we get to in communities where they just don't pencil out without a layered capital stack. And in most cases that requires sophisticated tax credits or opportunity zone type funding. And so a lot of the developers and entrepreneurs and nonprofits don't have that level of sophistication to navigate how to do performas to make these projects pencil out, and even how to, you know, interact with those folks who may want to be investors in the space. So what, again, what we try to do at the desk is to demystify, you know, what that process looks like, and really try to connect them to the folks who may have the capacity to ultimately move these projects forward.
Juan, I'm going to pivot to you. You know, private capital, it's arguably the most, I think, important piece of this puzzle. In private capital, this is not going to be a surprise to anyone on this podcast, private capital is missing from many of our Black and Latinx communities. And your company, P3 Markets, sort of works at the intersection of public and private. And you're working hard to be kind of an inroad for private investment in underinvested places. So from your point of view, why aren't more inroads available? And if we build them as you have and as you continue to do at P3 Markets, will private capital flow?
Yeah, great question, great commentary. And I completely agree with your comment about the real estate ecosystem. I think I would take it just one step further in saying that there's an impact that happens with each real estate development that is real at the community level. And we're trying to look at ways to change the outcomes of the built environment. So first, it's important to understand that real estate, of course, is about location. They say location, location, location. Private capital is mostly about numbers, relationships, and numbers. They really want to make sure that that the developer cares about the bottom line, and they want to build relationships with organizations that have proven financial success. So this requires some time, expertise, and a book of success or a book of business where they can go back and see, you know, the deals that you've done in the past. So all developers have to be very accurate with project due diligence and finance. So I'm very glad that the community desk is helping with that, because there's many moving pieces to a deal, and those risks have to be mitigated before a deal can materialize. So it's expensive to do a project because you have to pursue the deal on the one end, and then you have to fund the deal through the pre-development phase of the project. And so small developers typically have challenges with those types of funds. That being said, you know, we want to see more real estate development firms that are owned by women or people of color, but there has to be some new access to this type of capital. Private investors are obviously really care about creating, you know, a nice built environment for their tenants. The tenants that are going to be there have to take advantage of the location to be able to make a profit. But we care about the community also getting a piece of the entire picture to be involved from the beginning. So a smaller deal, which would be somewhere in the range of $3 to $8 million, it requires a specific set of due diligence and compliance for that deal. And the pursue capital might be a little bit smaller. So the level of sophistication is a little bit different than, say, a larger deal where you have to stack the capital, like Janae was mentioning, with different types of credits and public capital. Sometimes we see that the City of Chicago, Department of Housing, and Department of Planning and Development, they want to look for projects that are catalytic, that are going to make big changes, create jobs, create access, cultural amenities, things of this nature. So it's important to really tell that story very clearly to the people that are going to be investing in the project. And when we talk about investors, there's different levels of investment with a deal. They're called, in the investment world or in the development world, they're called limited partners. So the limited partners all have different investment objectives, and they're looking for ways to recuperate their investment. Some developers or some investors and developers, when they have a conversation, they start talking about the tranches the financial tranches when you look at when the payout is going to be or the waterfall of that development is going to occur, it's important to determine, you know, what is the risk appetite for those investors at that level. So it sounds complicated, but in reality, people have different wants and needs, and that's no different from private investors. So I think that for us, for people of color, for communities to have a seat at the table, much like Janae is saying, we have to really look at the impact model more closely, and that is the ecosystem. Ecosystem, the impact model of the built environment will bring about the reasons why the local community should be investing in projects. A lot of the projects that are putting out that we see today have a lot of gap capital, and that capital sometimes is financed by the municipality itself. And so if the municipality is a partner, I think that the real partner is the public, the people. And so we want to make sure that they're at the table and that we understand the benefits that are coming from the development, and the future and long-term benefits of such a development are very important. So, and I think that telling that story in that way will add a lot more value, not only to the developer, to the private investor, but also to the community as well.
So I want to ask you, Juan, about your company. The homepage of your website has this trademarked statement in bold white letters. And I'm gonna read it here verbatim. And it goes like this: the future of our world depends on integrating wealth with community. So that drew me in. And I want to hear more about it. So explain it to us a little bit.
At the most fundamental level, there's too much money in the hands of very few. This is something that's all across the United States. We can look at figures from the pandemic and quickly determine that the wealthy capitalize faster and more robustly than anyone else. I think that the concept of capitalism itself needs a refresh or an upgrade. There are many new models that are being tested around the world where the community is a partner to the people, the haves, if you will. And we're pushing the ideas of sharing the upside. So in quotation marks, sharing the upside with the built environment through commercial real estate. That's the difference in the way that we see the world in the future. We would like to see, in short, more positive sum real estate developments and a reduction of the zero sum real estate development that we see today. I want to explain the concepts. Positive sum is that you're adding a lot of value and adding livelihood and capacity to the neighborhoods that you're building in. So P2 Markets is co-creating models with communities to share the upside through ownership or real access and belonging to projects to help maintain the identity, the culture, and the values of Black, Indigenous, and people of color and the communities in which they reside. So that's what it means to us. It means to us having a transparent, open process where we co-create with the local community, where the funding comes from investors that care about driving impact into those communities and making sure that the people that live in those communities are able to have a good life, a dignified life, and access to opportunities where they can have, you know, fair livelihood. In other words, you know, can create wealth themselves.
So you may have already answered my next question because you were talking about investors who are interested in impact, social impact. But I'm going to ask this question because I think it's in a similar vein. The site, your website, also mentions the importance of, and I'm quoting here, forward-thinking real estate developers. You know, when doing, for example, public-private partnerships like opportunity zones or impact investing. So in your experience, who are these forward-thinking developers, and what personal and professional characteristics does the forward-thinking developer possess? Like, what are they seeing that others are not?
Well, I can tell you, I can see one right now. Linux. Linux is a forward-thinking developer that probably started in 1993. So, thank you so much for doing the work very early on. You're what we call a pioneer. So for us, a forward-thinking real estate developer should focus on community impact. They should focus on community impact first. What is the built environment going to do for this community? As much as financial returns, they have to make a profit. So developers should expand their strategies from place to ecosystem. So quoting Janet, instead of thinking about place, this is where my development is going to go. They're going to think about the larger ecosystem. And so thanks so much, Janae, for bringing that up. A forward-thinking developer should always think about increasing opportunities for local entrepreneurs, creating cultural amenities where people can come and communicate for the residents to feel that they belong and they're part of the new investment, and to help inspire new opportunities for the local workforce. So the built environment can be a catalyst for both health and for wealth in local communities. So a forward-thinking developer should be thinking about all of these aspects, not just the building and the profits. They should think about impact out, right? Look at the impact first and then build out from there. So the vision at P3 Markets is to build projects for P, where P, the public, is actually the community, not the municipality, people from the places where the projects are being built. The partner, you know, the P for private sources of capital, should come from investors that care about impact. And there's this whole world of investors that are called the ESG impact investors. And a lot of the larger corporations are looking at their ESG trading portfolios and looking at potentially the built environment as a way to change outcomes and to meet their ESG objectives. So we would like to inspire those investments in local communities at P3 Markets, and we would love to see them invest in local real estate developers that are women and people of color, because I think that large developers should start thinking in terms of creating JV agreements with local developers that know their communities, that know the people where they live, that they work with people that truly care about their community. It's hard to do that when you're at the corporate level, the ivory tower, and have a great idea for a project. It's hard to really make it real unless you have a local developer that's been there for 10, 15, 20 years doing the work. So Habitat's our partner in the project at 43 Green. We're what they call a protege developer for them. They're a large organization, and they do a lot of great projects in affordable housing. And also programs like Yield, where we have a phenomenal plan to really increase the number of women and people of color into the development space. And so I want to, you know, give a shout out to Terry and Cindy and Hugh for putting that program together, as well as LISC. And obviously also the Chicago Community Trust that has a strong involvement with this initiative. So a forward-thinking developer, in my opinion, is one that really thinks about impact first and cares about changing the outcomes of the local people, the community itself, and being very intentional about creating spaces for belonging. And that's important. There's inclusion, which is important, but belonging is where everyone feels that they're part of the project. And if we can share the upside, that would be basically the cherry on top.
So I'm going to ask a series of questions, and these are questions that are open to the group. So you can, you know, not everyone needs to respond to these questions, but they, you know, answers can come from any of you. I do want to talk about the trust just for a second here, and how the Chicago Community Trust, we recently launched the pre-development fund to help Black and Latinx community-based developers pay for some of those costs incurred during that very vulnerable pre-development phase of a brick and mortar project. For each of you, or maybe this is just a question for Janae and Lennox, from your perspective, why is pre-development so important?
I can jump in. So I think that the fund is a great opportunity. And I think I shared that with you, Mike, when you initially launched the fund. And I think it's important because it's a capital conversation, right? And so I think, you know, Juan talked about this in the sense of there's risk involved as a developer. And as a developer, you have to bear costs. So if you think about all those folks who may be responding to the city's RFP and the Invest Southwest neighborhoods, but there's a lot of upfront cost that's involved with sort of trying to make a deal work. And there's still risk involved. And then ultimately, even after all that work, the deal may not pencil out. You may not get the site. And so having that upfront capital really sort of helps the small developers, the community developers, to really sort of stretch those dollars and really sort of support them as they're thinking about being competitive with folks who may have a larger balance sheet, may have extended lines of credit, that they can sort of lean into to really do this work where smaller developers, community developers just don't have the access. So having that flexible capital, I think, has been just, you know, phenomenal for the community and for the city of Chicago.
Anything to add, Lennox?
Yeah, I would add by first, I think it bears mentioning that the trust has been kind enough to share some of its dollars with one of my projects. And so I'm thankful for that. I think that early stage capital is not always easy to access. Not everybody wants to get into the pool at the same time. And so the capital that has been deployed by the trust to Urban Equities has allowed me to move at a faster pace and to protect some speed to market opportunities. We have to understand this is all market driven. Just because I'm thinking about this idea doesn't mean that someone else is not thinking about the same idea. So it's really a competition. I've got to position myself, secure my position faster to protect my investment objectives and my mission. Capital allows me to move faster and allows me to get to a yes or no much more quickly.
And Janae and Juan are both nodding their heads. So there's a lot going on in our city and region right now to address the disparities that exist in our society and communities. And I want your thoughts. We don't have to go into a long conversation about this, but I do want your thoughts on some of the neighborhood investment initiatives that are happening right now. For example, the Invest Southwest initiative in the city of Chicago, opportunity zones throughout Cook County, and others that you may know about or are involved with. You know, from your perspective, maybe one or two of you could respond to this. Are they fulfilling their intention?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in on that because I think it's a good pivot from the previous conversations that Juan mentioned. I could so appreciate the fact that you're talking about as a developer, you're thinking about intentional development and holistic development because those are the priorities at the desk as well, is thinking about what types of projects can we bring to these communities that improve the quality of life and generate wealth. So I think you're spot on in terms of the work that you're doing. I think what I like about the Invest Southwest initiative, and it's similar to my experience when I worked in Detroit when they were going through their rebuilding process, is it's about concentrated investment. And so because the city of Chicago is taking a very concentrated approach in terms of sort of layering in its resources and its tools, it is shining a light on communities and doing intentional development in communities that historically has not been there. So it's great to see sort of that synergy and an alignment, not only across the city, but even things like the Chicago Prize and others, they're sort of layering in. And I think the more we do cluster development in the concentrated areas of the city, I think you'll see more impact.
I want to basically echo what Janae is saying, but I also want to think that I think it's quite genius, the Invest Southwest program. They actually have a mandate where local developer is actually part of the project. And so these projects are larger in scope. They're what we consider institutional sized deals. And so in essence, what Invest Southwest is doing is making sure that there's a matching going on behind the scenes where larger developers are looking at local developers and saying, hey, who do we partner up with so we can get this deal off the ground? And so now you have that plus the Chicago Community Trust Pursued Capital Fund grants. And now you have a stronger position for the local developer to say, hey, you know what? I'm part of the deal, right? I have Pursued Capital to add to the project because there's got to be a lot of due diligence done, studies. You have to put your initial test fits for the site, things of that nature. Do the legal aspects if there's going to be a subscription for investors. There's a cost to that. And so Invest Southwest sort of sets it up so the local community developer can do a JV with a larger developer. And just having the pursuit capital there potentially available will increase the promote on the deal. So whereas maybe a local developer was going to get a 15%, now with the pursuit capital, you're de-risking the project at the front end, and you can go ahead and fight for more. And I think that this is extremely important. And I agree with the program, and there should be also the flip side to that is the capital that may be invested through the TIF or other city funds, right? It's important to look at these very granular, how did the deal shake out? who got what. Because at the end of the day, that local developer might grow, hire a few more people, right, and be able to put the next deal on the table. And then at the end of the day, hopefully be off on their own doing the impact real estate development that needs to happen in the city of Chicago.
So our final segment, we've already talked about the importance of pre-development dollars and the trust's pre-development fund. And that's coming from a guy who works in philanthropy. So that was very philanthropy focused. But this is a podcast that's being put forward by a foundation. So this is coming from philanthropy. So I want to do kind of a fun follow-on rapid fire exercise. So just very quick response from each of you in a concise statement. If you were the emperors of philanthropy, what's the one thing you would do to make real estate development easier in Black and Latinx communities? Anything's on the table. No rules here.
Okay, I can go first. I have a real good idea for that. The first thing I would do is I would create a mission-related investment initiative at my foundation. If I had all the money, if I was the emperor and had all the money, I would say, okay, here's my MRI plans. I would put aside, you know, something in the range of $300 million to the side. And from that MRI, I will look at what is the impact that may be coming from the built environment into communities where we want to see changing outcomes. And what I would do is I would create another separate initiative to bring in smaller developers, right, to be able to access those funds, either for pursuit capital or to include into the deal as equity or capital. So in other words, they become the investors in the deal, and through their mission-related investments, they're able to take those funds, invest in projects that are going to catalyze changes in those neighborhoods, such as creating jobs, you know, creating opportunities for workforce, or the opportunity for the local community to own, you know, the commercial real estate or a portion of it. I would make that a prerequisite if I had it my way. And then I would basically then go to the city and to corporations and say, you know what, I put up, you know, $200 million. What about you, Coca-Cola? What about you, Chase Bank, that made, you know, I don't know, an infinite sum of money during the pandemic? Why don't you put a little bit of money into this same, you know, initiative? Because we already pointed up some of the cash, and let's make it bigger and better, right? I'm not afraid of density. I think we should think of, you know, density is also a good way to add a lot of value to community. We have to deal with, you know, what we call right now a lot of the traffic issues, but some of this stuff is going to be mitigated because of just the communities and how they're connected. So invest in TODs, invest in areas that are changing, make sure that the people are part of the conversation, and potentially maybe even make them part of the ownership structure. That's what I would do.
Yeah, so I'll go next. So I think I'll take a different approach from Juan, and I could totally understand that from a developer perspective. But I think for me, what I constantly struggle with on South and the West Side communities, and I think you've heard me say this often, Mike, is projects on the South and the West Side generally don't get funded unless there's a guaranteed income stream, right? So which is why you see a lot of affordable housing, which we definitely need that. And we have to have development that has the creditworthy tenants, right? So this is where you kind of exclude a lot of smaller entrepreneurs, is because the capital stack and the lenders are very concerned about putting a startup business or putting in a local entrepreneur who's not creditworthy. So for me, you know, as I think about how do we change the quality of life, the South Side of Chicago and the West Side, they are flooded, as you've heard me say before, liquor stores, dollar stores, beauty supply stores, and then there's social services. You know, basic things like a florist, right? Now we recognize that this is COVID and things are going to look different in COVID. But I think that these communities continue to struggle with just having the basic sit down restaurants and just the quality of life that you see on the North Side. And that's because the deals don't happen when investors and lenders have to take risk on projects that are not guaranteed, don't have guaranteed revenue. So if it was up to me, I would want the philanthropic community to back some of the creative projects that are risky, right? It's a startup. It's a business that's only been operating for 2 years. put the necessary capital in to back the project so that the bankers and the investors feel comfortable. And that allows us to grow that individual wealth and that business wealth with those businesses, but it still works for the developer in getting the necessary capital that they need to move these projects forward. Because without that creative capital and that risk-based capital, we're going to continue to see the same type of projects happening in these communities because folks are just very leery about taking a chance on new investments, different investments, which ultimately I think is going to change and improve the quality of life in these communities. So my bet is on put your money where your mouth is. Let's get some capital on the table to support these creative projects.
All right. All brilliant ideas. Lennox Jackson of Urban Equities, Janae DeFell of Community Desk Chicago, Juan Saldana of P3 Markets, thank you for everything you're doing to make equitable real estate development happen in our Black and Brown communities. And thank you for joining us on Trust Talks. This is Michael Davidson of the Neighborhood Investment Team at the Chicago Community Trust. Thank you to our listeners for listening. And I guess that's a wrap.